I'm going to talk about, well, if I was to really label this properly now, it would be very difficult because I'm not exactly sure how the discussion's going to move. But maybe I would call it social balance. There are all kinds of people nowadays who are engaged in spiritual practices, especially those who are following that which we would call the New Age, which doesn't really have the same meaning as it used to have. It used to mean things like that which broke away from the traditions, that which broke away from patterns which were coming from ancient times or which were acceptable in the society previously. So this kind of discussion or understanding was called new, and the idea was that it was bringing us into a time which would be better, which would be more evolved, more elevated in some way, which more or less would bring us to a situation where a new age would dawn, and ultimately there would be happiness. This idea of new age is not new. It's actually the human being's attempt or the human being's desire to reach out for a better place, to reach out for that heaven on earth, which actually everybody desires. And that's across the board, universal. Everybody wants happiness. Everybody wants success. Everybody wants prosperity. This is just normal. We all want to be loved and love, be able to love. So periodically we enter into some kind of period where things are changing. And when things are changing like this, we feel that there's a positive motion towards something that's an improvement. As far as I have seen in my lifetime, and actually my lifetime is a fairly good sample. I have lived through the post-World War II period where the establishment of society in the 50s was a very powerful development, coming off the times of depression and then world tension. I've lived through the 60s, which I suppose even today most people have some concept of, where the norms of society were within 1 or 2 years completely expanded. Things were blown apart. I've lived through the idea of spiritualism, the idea of communalism. I've lived through the breaking down of walls in Eastern Europe and Soviet Union. And I've lived through my own personal breaking down of the barriers of a culturally based religious tradition. So I've been through a lot. And I've been through a lot of situations where, through my own experience, the idea has developed that there'll be something new, something better, something favorable. And I see, if I'm to be honest, I see that this somehow brings encouragement. It brings something to live for. because I cannot just live for myself. I personally, and I know many people share this, more than you would imagine. I cannot live a selfish life, a life which is simply dedicated to me. Most people share that feeling, most of them. There are some prominent exceptions. And even amongst them, they have a rationale to justify their selfishness. I'm not going to get into that now because I don't think that's important to this topic. You might ask me in a question if you like, but right now I'm not talking about it. Me personally, and I know that I'm speaking for a lot of people, I desire a life that is integrated positively within a context where I feel I have value, I feel my contribution is desired, and that it has a positive input, not an illusory one, where people just say, oh, how nice you are. That kind of illusory appreciation is not useful. I'm talking about a very realistic, realistic experience where my life, my being fits within a greater picture and has a very positive impact within that picture. That's my desire. And I know that's the desire of most people. In fact, except for those who are somehow extraordinarily damaged or traumatized by the events of their life or the lack of love in their life, almost everybody shares that feeling. Now, let's take that in the context of the individual and the group. Me and the society within which I live, the community within which I live. I'm going to try to keep this generic enough, this discussion, generic enough so that it will make sense in a familial context, in a local community context, in a religious community context, spiritual community context, within the state context, and within the earth context, global context, which I suppose fits within a universal context, but that may be beyond our scope. I'm going to try to talk about the generic principles, which are the whole basis of trying to feel that connection with myself and the context within which I live. And I would go so far as to say that one of the main reasons we as individuals lost connection to what we are is because the context within which we lived has lost relevance to us, no longer accommodates us, no longer appreciates us. We feel alienated from a group, and therefore we feel alienated from ourselves. And this is an incredibly important point, because throughout all of these years that I have been dealing with people, And I can say I have been doing this very intensely since basically 1968. Previously in my university, I had a position where I had to deal with people. In my times in a religious group, and my time since that time, dealing with an enormous amount of people from all over the world. I've seen these people, myself included now, I'm trying to be generic. I've seen these people struggle with spiritual development. I've seen these people, I mean us, struggle and attain great personal accomplishments, great personal achievements, great personal knowledge, a lot of experience, a lot of capacity, even the fulfillment of a certain amount of their inherent potential as individuals. Yet, I have seen it's not enough. It's not enough. Now, we have spoken in the previous weeks, quite some time now, about this concept of not feeling good enough. To feel there's something lacking within ourselves. And I have tried to alleviate this problem to a great extent. In other words, to do in a major overhaul of our psycho-social, our psycho-emotional, our psycho-spiritual makeup. By saying that we are the person who will approve ourselves, we are the ones who will feel good enough or not. It is our choice. I have discussed as part of that analysis the influence our external society has on making the fertile ground for self-condemnation, creating the fertile ground that nurtures our acceptance of the concept that we are not good enough. But when I discussed how we were going to resolve this, I put that external concept to the side, this external group, this external facilitation of this negativity in ourselves, I put it aside. And I said that the real solution is to embrace within the spirit we are, the essence we are, that divine being we are, in connection with the divine source, Radha Krishna, if you will, God, however you wish to speak of that supreme Allah, Jehovah, Yahweh, doesn't matter to me. We accept the divine, we embrace the divine, we bring that divine's love and energy to us. We accept it, we reciprocate it, and we know deep inside we are good enough. And that is good. Yet, I'm sorry to report, I know that's not everything. Even though it's so cool, it's so wonderful, it's also seemingly so all-encompassing. But it's not. Because in existence, it's not just me and the divine. And even if I walk around feeling good enough and thinking myself fine, I still have to deal with other people. I still have to deal with my family. I still have to deal with work and economy. I still have to deal with life. So there's still something missing in this big picture. I've spoken about this a lot. Society, community. And it always breaks down on its practical implementation. So let's get into that, what it is that's missing, why it is that this New Age concept, as nice as it may have been, this spiritual concept, even religious concepts, are very much either causing one to become absorbed in the individuality of being, or totally merging the individuality of being within the group. Now, that was a mouthful. There's no way on earth I'm going to be able to properly explain that or do justice to that in the relatively short time I have. But I have seen that groups, spiritual groups, which work well, either have benign, benevolent dictators who tell, who cause everything to be in a certain way. And it's an either you accept it or you don't situation, so that those who feel good about it stay, those who don't go away. Or you have a situation where there are very few, if any, powerful individuals, and you have a homogeneous group of not very individualistic people. Now, let's put that aside because that's too complex. It's too complex to talk about the defects of a particular group. It's too complex to talk about defects because it's unlimited. You can find defects everywhere. And even if we knew them all perfectly and we worked to find a solution to them, it won't work. There's too many, and it will be more and more. Every time you add an individual, there's another potential for defect. So we're not going to find a solution that way. We need to find a solution in another way. Obviously, we all know it. There has to be a balance in life between a group and an individual. Obviously, we should have a group of very spiritually aware and powerful individuals. But do you really think that they're going to make a perfect society? Let's say you've got together this group of really powerful individuals. Do you honestly think that's going to make a great society? They might just bump into each other all the time. I see it all the time. I see when there's even very aware individuals get together, they bump into each other. They conflict because their expressions are required. Each one has to express. Great teachers aren't going to want to listen to me talk. They're going to say, I already know all that stuff. Why should I listen to this guy? He's got nothing to offer me that I don't already know. It's a conflict. Okay. Yet, there has to be a balance between group and individual. Is the solution to bring down all the individuals to some lowest common denominator? Because having a lowest common denominator and a highest common denominator Well, it's the same thing. It's a common denominator. It doesn't matter whether you call it low or high. What you're looking for is the commonality. And that's what I'm going to talk about. The commonality. That which is the essential common point which makes things what they are. How did previously functioning societies break down? Let's talk about Varnashram, if you will. Seemingly, on the surface of it, a great social explanation. You divide people according to their qualities academically. You understand what each one is naturally good at. You engage them accordingly by nurturing that capacity from the earliest times through educational experiences. And you reward them accordingly. And theoretically, the society is very nourishing to others. It nurtures. Everybody feels comfortable. That's the theory of it. Historically, some people anyway, have said that all broke down at the point of greed and exploitation. When, for instance, Brahmanas became greedy, or kings started exploiting. You could say that. You could say that this was really the cause of the whole breakdown. You could if you wanted to. I have no problem with that, because greed and exploitation are the two factors that destroy social interactions. After all, if you live on your own, you can be greedy all you want. It doesn't matter. If you live on your own, you can't really exploit. There's nobody to exploit. Exploitation, at least socially in its context, requires there's other people. So you need to have some kind of group for exploitation to take place. And the definition of group is mutually beneficial interactions. That's the only way the group can nourish and function and flourish. Where there's exploitation, group breaks down. So let's get back to the theory of social ideals as in the Varna system. The theory only works if you personally accept the premise, there will not be exploitation. Nobody is greedy. Well, even you can accept greed if the greed doesn't affect you or others. Some person who's not very significant might be greedy and want more food than someone else. You can live with that. You can live with a certain quantity of greed that might even, for example, motivate somebody who's making money. It might. So a certain amount of it is not necessarily in and of itself bad. It just depends on how well it's tolerated, how well it functions. But exploitation is another beast entirely. Exploitation says, what I am exploiting you. Now, that only works so long as either the person who is exploited is not aware of it. After all, that's working nowadays in modern society, where people are exploited by businesses and governments and drug companies and healthcare and educational institutions and lawyers, and in fact, a lot of people who exploit them to take money, exploit them for control, exploit them to be in a dominant situation. We see it everywhere. In fact, exploitation is the rule in modern society, not the exception. That's why we feel so unhappy. We feel exploited in some way or another. Every time we pay taxes, we feel exploited because we look at the government, we look at how they're spending money and how they're wasting and corruption and craziness and lobbyists and silliness and stupidity and foreign policy that's worthless and fighting. And we look at it and we say, what the hell are we giving these people money for? They don't know what they're doing. So when we write our checks or we pay our taxes, we're upset. We feel exploited. We feel exploited when we take a service from someone and we don't get what we think is a proper service. A worker might feel exploited when they give their work and are not properly compensated. This feeling is there. It's all over, this feeling of being exploited. Even, you know, what's funny, the president of a certain country might feel exploited because he's not free to do what he knows is right. He's being forced into situations. His position is being exploited just to gain enough support or power to do anything. This feeling is very universal. Of course, there are some who are such expert exploiters. They're on top of the pile of exploiters. They're really big-time exploiters. Now, let's do a thought experiment to clarify this situation. Because right now, the situation in the world is so complex. The situation in society is so complex, you can't resolve it with some solution. It's not even clear what the problem is. Let's do a thought experiment to try to clarify. It's kind of like sometimes when I'm mixing music, I put all the faders down at one point and just bring them up one after another to hear each sound in a new light and to hear the picture in a new way. It always helps. Let's wipe the slate clean. There is no social order in our thought experiment. There's only people. There are no companies. There is no government. We are all living, a group of us, as far as we have the capacity to see. We are all living in some area surrounding us. We're just people. I'm not even talking about devastation. I'm talking about just wiping all designations clean, all constructions and structures clean. What do we have? We have people. What do we need? Well, we need water. Number one, we need water. We need heat, perhaps. We need food. We need shelter. Right there. Very clear needs. Let's start with water. We have to have a well. Or we have to have a source of water. So, how do you get it? You dig it. Who can dig? Only those people who've got the strength. What do you dig with? A shovel. Well, the shovel has a handle. Let's say it's made of wood. How is the handle made? Well, it's cut. It's carved. It fits within some metal at the bottom. How is that made? It's forged. And then you have to get food. So somebody has to farm. So then there has to be selling. Somebody has to sell. But then there has to be a medium of exchange. So everybody has to have something to exchange. But then there has to be regulation to avoid the nature of people to cheat and to protect against some other group who wants to get without work by coming and stealing. So what do we have? Everybody has a work. Everybody has a position. When we start from blank, we do not think anybody as better. It's just not like that, because no water, we die. No food, we die. No protection, we die. We see everybody as valuable. We appreciate everybody. We acknowledge everybody. Now, just, I have been speaking about this many times in personal relationships. You recognize what the other person is by your awareness. You appreciate them for what they are. You accept and acknowledge them. That's the missing ingredient in social interaction. And it becomes very obvious when you look at a blank slate. If you simply say, everyone should be equal, you make a declaration of equality. People don't feel equal like that. Somebody says, I'm stronger, I'm better. I'm more beautiful, I'm better. I'm smarter, I'm better. I'm richer, I'm better. You have these kind of ideas to be better. One wants to be better. And when one wants to be better than someone else, that naturally means the other person is seen lower or pushed down in some way. So immediately, we have some kind of a conflict. And the conflict is our attitude about ourselves. Our attitude about ourselves creates conflict. And in that attitude, exploitation is born. I'm stronger, you do what I want, otherwise I beat you. I'm more beautiful, I wrap you around my finger and get what I want. I'm richer, I exploit you, or I can buy any kind of exploitation I want. I can buy anybody's service to do anything. I don't even have to pay them a lot because you need me. I'm smarter, I'll figure out some way to exploit you very cleverly. So this, I'm better, causes exploitation. Can you resolve that simply by saying to someone, you're not better than anyone else, you're equal? No. It's only understood when you have a blank slate and you have to start from scratch, and when you're super hungry and somebody brings you food, you're filled with enormous gratitude, thankfulness, appreciation. Thank you. Yet after some time, when there is a water system, sewage system, commercial farms, supermarkets, You take everything for granted. You walk into the supermarket. I've told you this before. There are kids in inner city in New York who think milk comes from boxes, from cartons. Milk comes, they ask, where did milk come from? From the carton in the store. Where does that come from? They don't know. I mean, who talks about cows? It's inconceivable to us, isn't it? But there are actually kids who think like that. They're not stupid. They have no exposure. We become dissociated. Marx and Engels talked about this. And I used to think this was a really fantastic point. We have become dissociated from our work. Work has become a means to an end. The end being money. Or the end being the goal, the fruit. It's actually, if you think about it, in relation to Bhagavad Gita, where you have a right to perform a work, but you don't actually have a right to the fruit of the work. Whether the fruit comes or not, we shall see. But you don't have a right to it. After all, a million things can happen. But you have a right to do your work right now, to act right now. Because right now, in the present moment, you are connected to the activity you are doing. That means to be associated with your work, as opposed to being disassociated from your work. Now, I'm sure these gurus of communism didn't actually mean it like that, but I took it that way. Now, when you have this feeling of an individuality which creates individuality in a position superior to group, it's out of balance. When individuality is superior to group, it's out of balance. When group is superior to individual, it's out of balance. If the group insists that every individual conform to a certain way of thinking, a certain way of talking, a certain way of dressing, a certain way of living, it goes out of balance. The individual is placed into the form of the group. And similarly, when the individual has power and it enforces that power over the group by taking money or taking power, the social balance goes out. The secret is the balance between group and individual. The mechanism by which this takes place really boils down to recognition of value, appreciation of others, acceptance, allowance, a feeling of gratitude. Every problem in society, especially spiritual societies, boils down to this. Why is it nobody, at least in spiritual societies I know of, they don't want to be workers or farmers? Because it's lower. The higher people are brahmanas or maybe kshatriyas. Everybody wants to do the higher because they will be appreciated, valued, accepted, allowed. Because we can't find these things in society, we seek out power, a position of power, to get recognized, to get appreciated, to get acknowledged in a social context. And because of that phenomena, nobody wants to act in ways which are not respected, not acknowledged, not valued. And that's why the brahmanas or the kshatriyas, who are considered to be in a higher kind of position, money is a very important part of their lives. Power is an important part of their lives, regardless where they are. Because it's the external manifestation of appreciation and a recognition of worth and value. If we wish to have a spiritual society, and we should, because after all, you don't live alone. You will never live alone. You will always live within a group context, always. That's just the nature of life. There has to be not a statement of equality, but a statement of recognition and a statement of appreciation that translates into value, to actually value, a person for what they are. This is ultimately the purest spiritual principle, to know that we are essence, we are divine, we are spiritual beings who are directly connected to the divinity, the source, Radha and Krishna, if you will. We are divine spiritual beings and value that, who live in this world with physical characteristics. Physical characteristics. We have a body. We have a mentality. We have characteristics and personality. We express divinity according to our energetic flow. We express ourselves in physicality. And each of us have a natural inherent expression. And if we value that, appreciate it, recognize it, each person feels safe, secure, and integrated, and will therefore positively contribute with their value. That's the theory. It doesn't always work like that, okay, but without it, you'll never have a society. And again, it boils down to the individual. But not an individual who's necessarily powerful or expert, but an individual who recognizes, who is aware of the spiritual quality and its expression in physicality. Now, what I like about this is that it balances again. We're always looking for balance, the yin and yang of it all, the male and female of it all, the opposites that are in a constant opposition that binds them together. Just like when two people are fighting, they are bound together in that opposition. They can't give it up, so they are linked. They are doing a dance, and they're in constant absorption in the other. It's the nature of this world. this constant opposition that brings everything together as a unit. These balances of opposites, bringing everything together as a unit. That's that yin-yang of it all. This balance in this world, we have this very deep spirituality, this essence, the pure essence of expression. This is the purest of pure feelings, the purest of pure awareness, consciousness that accepts, receives. And when it's to express, it requires organization. It requires delineation. Look at the body. It's delineated, you see? It's not just a feeling. It's got a form. It's a delineated form. It's something which has its form. It's something that has its outline, its limits, its definitions. Even to speak, you need rationality. You need logic. You need reason. You need to have education so that you can express properly. You have to train that left brain. Yet what happens? So much training in the left brain, we lose the right brain. Or so much of the right brain, with just so much feeling, we float away and lose the left. There has to be the balance where we feel, okay, too much thinking, not very good. There has to be the feeling. Too much feeling, not very good. There has to be the rationality. Back and forth. I feel this all the time. The constant tug of the two. You know, while I'm giving these lectures, these discussions, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm constantly tugging between the two, trying to give a picture that is balanced. If you listen to my various lectures, you will hear me constantly struggling to create balance in the descriptions. Constantly giving balance in the discussion, because that's my nature. I gotta give the whole picture. If I don't, I'm very upset. I need to express the whole. I live within the whole all the time. That's my nature. I bring together all these elements from all over the place to create a comprehensive whole that works. So society is like that. You need to constantly deal with the balancing. And where did these crazy ideas come from where we lost appreciation for other persons? We lost the capacity to recognize them for what they are. We've lost the capacity to accept them and allow them to be what they are. And it really is a serious loss. Because without this very basic, elemental, essential spiritual quality of accepting and appreciating others for what they are, embracing that, giving them the safety and security to manifest that, there can be no society. There's all these other problems of trust and all that other stuff. We've already talked about it. But this is, in my opinion, the salve or the glue, which are quite different things, but the red thread, the power that keeps society working, especially a spiritual one, is this recognition, appreciation, this valuing the worth and never giving others a reason to feel not good enough. It's an art. If ever there was a time when a society worked great, it was a time when these principles were functioning. Where somebody who used his intelligence for the sake of others did so without economic consideration, did so without having to please anybody, did so simply because it was the right thing to do, just gave of themselves. Those days are gone. Everything's based on somehow or another gain, personal gain. Okay, there are people who are very selfless. I got it. But I'm trying to speak about that essential element, which is the breakdown, without which there is a breakdown in all of society. And it is the same exact ingredient which causes our personal breakdown as living beings, as spiritual beings, that we can no longer express what we are. I don't know. I don't know if I expressed this properly. I don't know if anyone thinks it has any value. I mean, even while I'm listening to me say this, I think, yeah, sure, right. It's like we feel helpless and hopeless. Because we know perfectly well that it's all the other person's fault. When we're trying to work together, this other person screws it all up all the time. So it's never going to work. I don't trust them. I can't appreciate them. Listen to what they say. Look at what they do. How can I work with these people? I can't. I will not. They only hurt me. It's helpless how we feel, because we're in a hopeless situation. Because everybody stinks except for me. I'm fine. I know it. Because I believe these principles of New Age, that I'm good enough, I'm okay. But geez, that other person over there really stinks. Talks like an idiot, does stupid things, hurts me, attacks me. This is the problem. And the solution is to, instead of going, that person, we say, okay, they are who they are. I allow them to be so. I shall not agitate them. I shall not demand and expect. I shall be of service. I shall be helpful, selflessly, up to the point where it exploits me, but selflessly as I can. And I will appreciate the good. I will not condone or amplify the negative in the other person, but I accept that is what it is. I allow it. If everybody were to simply back off like this and like do over, start over, just back off. Stop being aggressive and defensive. But just back off. Not defenseless, but filled with the power that we are. But back off from aggression. No aggression, no defense. Just being the powerful person you are. Allowing others to be what they are. And appreciating them, because you'll see them in another way. When you stop being aggressive, they'll stop reciprocating with your aggression, with their own defense. When you stop defending, they will stop aggressing. We're talking energetically here. I'm not talking about the practicality of life. You shouldn't let anyone cheat you. But balance it. Just not be a problem. If you refuse to be a problem, you'll be amazed at how things start to change. Hey, not overnight. It'll take a while. But it's the only hope. It's the only hope. I really hope that what I have presented here today gets down to the generic difficulties that we're facing and gives a generic solution. I mean, I think it is, but I know it's very hard to make this work because, after all, the problem is always the other guy. I recognize that. I'm being sarcastic. When we recognize the problem starts and stops with us, there's some hope in this world. Anyway, I'm not sure if this discussion has accomplished what I wish to accomplish, but at least it has been an expression to the limits of my capacity right now to express it. The comments that I've gotten are less questions than they are people getting on my case. They're like people. So I think that's very cool. First of all, I know, I'm aware that I ended up the lecture part on a kind of doubtful note. I even heard somebody wrote to me and said that I finished my speech with some notes of despair, that we still have no ways of solving the situation. Well, that's true. I did. And what's interesting, as I received, I got four very elaborate feedbacks, and of them, two of them said that, well, I can relate with some people this way, but others, no way. They're all hopeless. Basically, this is the thought, that these guys over there, they're okay, because we are similar. We think similarly. We feel similarly. And we don't value exploitation. We value cooperation and giving and sharing. And these guys over there, they are totally different, don't think like me at all, don't feel like me at all, don't act like me at all, don't have the same capacities, don't have the same interests. And a lot of what they do is based on exploitation. I don't like them. Now, well, I think that's natural. And it was this overwhelming energy of, that overwhelming energy of coming from the audience, which was, I mean, I'm not saying everybody thought like this and therefore it was overwhelming. I'm saying that from those from whom it came, it was overwhelming. This thought that, okay, what you're saying is okay, but only for a very small group of people that I know. And otherwise, uh-uh. Now, that's all right. I mean, that's normal. It's not like this is outside of what I was saying, but my lecture ended on despair because recognizing others, recognizing and allowing others, accepting others, means that you recognize when you can do something, when you can say something, and when not. I mean, after all, we're not talking here about creating a community in some land somewhere. We're just simply talking about social cooperation, generic principles. Now, how that manifests and where that manifests, that's another point. But we're talking about community here. So if you're going to create a community, it would be with people who naturally you can work with. You'd have to be insane to try to make a community together with of people you can't work with. Why would you do it? If you're a group of artists who want to get together and be artistic, you wouldn't include non-artists. It wouldn't make sense. So, yet, let's put aside the creation of community. I tried to say that in the very beginning. I'm not talking about the creation of community that we already talked about. I'm talking about society. Social interactions, wherever they may be, generically, they require these principles of recognition, allowance, acceptance, appreciation, value. When you buy food from someone who has grown it, does it matter at all what they think, how they feel, who they drink beer with at the end of the day? None of this matters. All that matters in your interaction, they have food, you compensate them for the food they give you. That is the interaction. A lot of interactions are like that. A lot of interactions are exchanges. They do not depend on political agreement. You can have people who are from total opposites of the political spectrum doing business with each other because it doesn't matter what they think. If you were forced to sit together in a room and listen to them, you might not be able to tolerate what they're saying. You might stand up and say, "I disagree entirely. This is horrible what you're saying." But that's another context. A society doesn't necessarily require that. A society can live with people with different opinions. The problem comes when somebody else's different opinion says that my opinion will be the one and only one, your opinion will be crushed. You are not allowed to have it. You're not allowed to express it. And if you do, you lose your freedom. Then it's a problem. But if the farmer down the street thinks differently than you do and you need to buy food, so what? You're not going to the person for a conversation. You're going to get food. That's the essence of a social cooperation and context on the practical level. But if you're going to make a community where you want it to have a theme, then naturally you would want those persons who contribute to the theme to be part of your endeavor. And if your community with a theme requires an investment, requires sacrifice, naturally you will want there to be a acceptance. You would want there's no exploitation because there's sacrifice involved. You have to give something. So, generically, all social interactions are based on the same principle. And even I'll read, actually, appreciation of every person is a part of culture in some corporate firms in business. In other words, if you don't have it, you don't inspire people to work. You don't get their best work. They see no reason to contribute intellectually or to come up with an innovation. Or they may even work against each other subtly. So in business structures, this cultivation of this mentality of appreciation and recognition is essential for survival. You'll see this more and more as it becomes harder and harder to make money. Only those firms that do cultivate such appreciation will last. Those that don't will fall. Those that are based on exploitation will drop away. You know, what I'm talking about is not an option. It's required. It's not like I'm talking about this because I have some desire to do some optional thing that's very good. I'm talking about this because it's required for the survival of the human race. I'm talking about the very basic principle of win-win here. We need each other. We need each other. And we need all kinds of people. That doesn't mean you appreciate and value criminals, and you appreciate and value people who exploit, or you appreciate and value people who cheat. It doesn't mean that. It means that this generic principle, regardless of how smart somebody seems to be, or how cultured they seem to be, or how expert they seem to be, everybody is needed. I mean, here in Gainesville, where I live, this whole town is filled with intellectuals and doctors. We have three of the biggest hospitals, or two of the biggest hospitals in Florida, in this city. We have the biggest university in Florida, in this city. And this entire city is filled with academic people, health-related people. There's the huge biobusinesses here. This town is incredible from that point of view. So you got all this like intelligentsia in this one little town. And then you've got the people who support that. And in Gainesville, it's really hard to get a good service person. Somehow or another, the people who do service in this town, there's something wrong. I know I used to use one electrician guy. I really liked him. His name was Terry. And he had to leave the town. He had no work here. He said there's not enough work. There's not enough money involved. Another guy used to do some repairs now and then. He had to stop. Construction industry is dead. So service people are going because they used to service the construction industry. Servicing residential people is not a big business. And the ones who do it, they're desperate to make enough money to support their businesses. So they feel alienated. I see it right here, the practicality. We need these people. And because we don't value them, they stop performing their services. And that causes chaos. It's a question of understanding and recognizing what it is that makes society work. We need each other. It's very different than when you speak about, I'm going to create a community out here, you know, even outside of Moscow on some piece of land. Because you are working within the infrastructure that already exists. You don't have to duplicate it. You're going to plug into the utilities that exist. You're going to have an army and a police. You're going to go to the banks down the street. You're going to go to the local supermarket. And you're going to have a bunch of people living together who are going to just do their thing somewhere together. That's okay. That's fine. I would love such a thing. After all, a group of people together who all do the same thing. How cool is that? But don't be in the illusion that you're creating a society. You're creating a community within a society. It's a very different animal because society needs everybody. Community doesn't. Neither does a family because they take the services of the society and all of its aspects. So we've been talking about different stuff. Okay, that was as far as I could answer in a way which would I'd feel happy about those points. Now we've got other points. I'm just going to read the question, okay? In English and... it's from Maha. It's a good question. He doesn't have to be embarrassed by it, so he can read it directly in Russian. Unfortunately, society and parents, since childhood, facilitate and reinforce in various ways our perception of ourselves on the basis of our achievements and constant comparison of ourselves to others. On the other hand, when we are perfectionists and apply it to ourselves, we always wish to be better and better and start to, quote-unquote, exploit the world for perfecting ourselves. In other words, using the world as a tool to become more perfect. Still, on the other hand, isn't it so that there are cosmic cycles and that overall human society, I mean, historically we've seen this, is more unjust than fair. There's more injustice than there is justice. There's a total imbalance. Would it not be wise for us to wait until this overall darkness finishes, it's over, and we'll be able to more efficiently and naturally come together into a spiritual society? End of question. Utopia. All of a sudden, the darkness flows away, and there's utopia, there's heaven. The darkness is gone. There's heaven. All night long it's been dark. And as soon as the sun comes up, it's heaven. Hey, what an illusion that is. Do you actually think that the real problem is simply because there's darkness? Do you honestly think that the darkness was imposed upon you by the universe? That the universe, the cosmos created the darkness? And that one day the universe is going to push a button and it's going to, like, on an electrical motor, lift this darkness. And then it's gone and everybody's going to say, wow, look at this. Spiritual, and it's natural, and we're all wonderful. I mean, you are really thinking like that. What an idealist. I embrace that idealism. It's such a great spirit. Totally impractical. It is not going to happen like that, because first of all, the cosmos didn't make the darkness. We did. The cosmos doesn't have an electric motor that lifts darkness. We've got to do it. And even if the cosmos had such an electric motor, and it would be gone. But we'd be the same people. And we would do the exact same stuff. Why would it be different? We're the same people. So we would create the same world. Because we're not very intelligent. We need to develop this now. Because when we develop it now, this darkness will be filled with more light. Each of us will be a source of light. By not being aggressive, by not being defensive, by simply being that source of illumination, we will gradually lift that darkness. And all social interactions depend on that. Because even if you lift the veil and you're still aggressive and defensive, you'll reproduce it all over again, instantly. It'll take 1 week and it'll be back. Now, I'm sorry to pop the bubble of your idealism here. I know that makes me terrible. But hey, you know, who said I have to be a nice guy? I don't have to agree. Okay, I'm trying to balance. And I will try to create win-win, but I mean, I do have my opinions, you know. Does that actually answer your question? Okay, now there's also another set of points which boil down to that the real problem is when I don't love myself, I'm not satisfied by myself, and naturally this comes from my past and whatever, that I will naturally exploit others or try to be better than others, and I will try to prove that I'm good enough. I'll try to prove that I'm better. I will try to prove that I have power and capacity to gain recognition, or at least to prove to myself that I'm really okay because I've done this. We've already talked about. This is last week's discussion and previous discussions. Put that aside. I'm not saying it's a slogan that to respect each other and to accept each other. I'm saying it's something we have to work on in ourselves. And when we actually feel this way, we can create communities. I'm not saying you should take people randomly and then tell them, if you feel this way of respect and love, we'll make a nice community. It doesn't work like that. You've got to already feel that way to work within a community in this idealistic sense, in this evolved sense. Or you have to cultivate it, because even if you as parents, this is a real kick in the head. I love this one. Even if you as parents are evolved like this, and you create this great community, your children are not going to share it. Generally. Why? Because they have to rebel against you. After all, they're your children. You're their parents. They've been feeling the pressure from you. So they want to break free. So they're going to somehow disagree with you and your community and all your sweetness. And they're going to consider it this sickening sweetness, this just everything perfect sweetness. I'm just going to go out there and go wild. And I'm going to rebel against you. And then the community breaks down again. Unless you somehow brainwash them or take away their individuality or convince them of some greater good that's superior to their individuality. I'm telling you, this is not an easy thing. It's very difficult. Was there such a society somewhere? Well, yeah, maybe for some time. But this whole problem of this regeneration of it causes it to break apart. Is it somewhere now? I mean, maybe somewhere. I don't know. I don't go around the world checking out societies. And after all, on the internet, every society is going to advertise themselves as the answer, as the ones who've got it all together. And then if you move there because you think it's so cool, you'll find out, good Lord, these people have got some problems here. So I can't answer that. You know, let's get back to this point of freedom. Allowance. When you allow someone to be what they are, when you accept them as they are, you recognize what they are, you allow them to be what they are, this demands a certain amount of detachment. We talked about that last week. Detachment does not mean no consideration or lack of concern or pushing away. It means allowance, detachment. It's a conscious decision to give freedom, to give facility in a detached way. It's also a part of love, not to bind up, not to restrict, not to suffocate others with what we call love. But it's allowance. It's a detachment. It's to let be. To let be. If you are overly attached in a society or a family, like a parent never lets go, never wants to let go of the child, never wants to allow them to do all the wrong things that they did, because they did some really wild stuff when they were their age, and they look at that and they say, no way you're going to do what I did when I was your age. Oh, no way. So I'm going to put up walls and restrict you. And then the child says, yeah, listen to this. You know, restricting me like that, that's not nice. I got to rebel against you, break free. Same jazz all over again. Honestly, there's like no answer to this because society is life, it's evolution, it's going to constantly be like that. The thing that can change is this allowance, is this recognition, is this acceptance. It's part of evolution, it's part of development, it's part of, it's part of the growing process. You're never going to have a situation where you're going to have this society and this is it. Whatever it is, it is. This is it. It's like the same disease we have when we talk about the spiritual world. This is it. It's static. It's perfect. It's perfection. It doesn't get any better than this. It is always so. But that's illusion. Especially when you're dealing with human natures, when you're dealing with social interactions. There will always be challenges. There will be this opposites, challenging, responding, handshaking, continuing, discussing, figuring out, evolving, growing through challenge response. I mean, here I am talking about society, and I don't believe there's a solution. I don't believe there's an answer. I believe there's a process. There's a process. 100% I believe there's a process. And we're talking about the process. I don't believe there's a solution. I don't believe if you say, this is it. Even you want to quote Vedic literature and say, Varnashram Dharma is the solution. It's not a solution, it's a process. It's a process of social organization. It's not a solution. A solution means it's finished, it's solved, it's over. It's static. A process is an ongoing mechanism. It's an ongoing facility. It's an environment within which life manifests. It's not a thing unto itself. It's a facility for society, which is not a thing unto itself. Society is not a thing unto itself. Neither is a government. That's funny. But these are facilities so that I can live, so that you can live, and we can allow each other to function and to grow or to do whatever it is we do. It's a facility that I live for a while and die peacefully. That's all. It doesn't exist separate from life. It is life. It's a facility for life. So all that we're talking about is a process. It's not a solution. And any questions that come to me always come with the assumption that this thing we're talking about has a solution. There is no solution. There's only a process. And that very much works in tandem with life, with the moment, with the present, with the whole concept of what it means to experience. Right now, it's a continual, ever-existing, non-ending process of the expression of consciousness, the expression of spiritual energy, the expression, it's an expression, it's a process. And now I feel good about the discussion today. Because when we ended before the questions, I felt somehow I managed to get myself in the corner of trying to come up with a solution, even though I knew there was no solution. So I painted myself into the corner, and here I was stuck. And I walked away thinking, blech. God, did that stink. And naturally, you, the listening audience, wrote to me and said, hey, you can't do that. What kind of person are you? You give this talk, you know, you got us all riled up, and then you walk away with blech. It's not allowed. Okay, because it's a process. Now I'm happy. Because I'm not in the corner anymore. I haven't denied life. I haven't restricted life. Life is fine. All is well. It's a process. And I'm very happy with that, at least to be part of it. And I thank you very much.